Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Alvin Schmidt is the author of our book of the month for February, Faith Misused: Why Christianity is Not Just Another Religion. This new book is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number 1-800-325-3040, or learn more about Faith Misused at issuesetc.org. Find out how faith is an exclusively Christian word and how Christians can reclaim it in Faith Misused, the Issues Etc. book of the month for February.
And it goes to show that with these hate speech laws, which are so vaguely worded, so subjective, they can really be manipulated and used and arbitrarily enforced if you get someone in power who wants to make a point.
So many times you hear marriage today, people say, I didn't marry the perfect one. I missed the perfect one. I got stuck with someone who's not perfect. And so I need to leave this one and go find someone better. That's a selfish notion, a concept of the world that the devil loves to feed.
I'm, quote, just a mom, or I'm, quote, just a dad, or I'm just a good neighbor. I'm just a member of my congregation. I never did anything great. So this myth of the one great thing can lead to both neglect and regret.
What Jesus does, he sees the wrath of God coming, and he leans over, so all the wrath of God goes on him rather than on us.
Twins in Virginia love listening to Issues Etc.
When you hear the word faith used today, it's used in a lot of different ways, isn't it? It can apply to big things and trivial things. We even hear other religions other than Christianity referred to as faiths or interfaith. Is that a proper biblical use of that word? Most of the time that we're hearing faith used today, well, we're hearing it used wrongly and not in accord with how Scripture uses that word. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. on this Friday afternoon, February the 4th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We'll spend today's first hour discussing faith and Christianity's uniqueness with Dr. Alvin Schmidt, and then we'll look forward to Sunday morning talking with Dr. Carl Fikancher about Jesus calling the first disciples in Luke chapter 5. Dr. Alvin Schmidt is Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College, and he's author of the Issues Etc. book of the month for February, Faith Misused: Why Christianity is Not Just Another Religion. Dr. Schmidt, welcome.
Thank you for having me again.
In your book, Faith Misused, it shows that faith, this Greek word pistis in the New Testament, is really an exclusively Christian word, and that this biblical fact is largely, well, unknown to non-Christians and even Christians today. How long has this ignorance about the word faith been in existence?
Well, for centuries, virtually almost from the beginning. Let me give a little introduction in terms of how I came about to write this particular book. I might also mention, without any pride or boasting, that much of what I say in this book has not been said before. And that took me about 20 years, therefore, to write this particular book. Back in 2002, when I was asked to write a chapter in a book titled Anonymous God, I wrote about polytheism, the new American religion. While I was doing some research in terms of writing that particular book, I came across a lengthy article in the Anchor Bible Dictionary of 1992. The author was a German New Testament scholar by the name of Dieter Lehrman. He made the interesting observation that I had never heard or seen in print before. He mentioned, for example, that the concept of pistis, which is the Greek word for faith, and likewise with fides, which is the Roman or Latin word for faith, had no religious meaning. This stunned me, because we always apparently had just thought that the term pistis, faith, as borrowed from the Greeks primarily, meant exactly what the New Testament talks about its meaning, namely, it was a religious concept. This was not true at all among the Greeks and the Romans. Then I kept thinking and reading about this. In the meantime, I might mention from then, 2002, to the present time, 20 years, I wrote 4 additional books because I was in the back of my mind thinking about this particular idea that Learman mentioned, that Christianity, that the word faith had no meaning, religious meaning among the Greeks. I wondered, has anyone else said this, and is this really true? Then I came across, a couple of years later, another interesting book by an American Greek scholar by the name of William Payne Hatch. He wrote a very, well, basically was a PhD thesis, which he published in. And the name of the PhD thesis was The Pauline Idea of Faith, Its Relationship to Jewish and Hellenistic Religion. He made even a more clearer statement than Learman did, for example, when he indicated that faith, again, was an exclusively Christian concept. It had ethical overtones, and all of this was not known to the Greeks and the Romans. The history of pistis now began to give me even more information. I kept asking myself, if this is correct, if Hatch is correct and Learman are correct, if so, have Christians been aware or unaware that pistis had this exclusive theological meaning in the New Testament? And the more I read, the more I became convinced on the basis of the evidence, but for some reason or another, Christians apparently did not know. They knew that the word faith, that the word pistis or faith meant just that, a religious meaning. But they did not apparently know that the word pistis, which did not have any religious meaning, was a Christian innovation now. This was a new meaning that pistis received in the history of religion, if you will, and it applied exclusively and only to Christians. Since then, only a couple of years ago, 2015, a Oxford scholar by the name of Teresa Morgan even further documented the fact that the word pistis and pistis language in the New Testament is never referred to any group but Christians. It's exclusively Christian. So then one begins to ask, well, then how come this seems to have been forgotten and perhaps never really consciously known? As I said a moment ago, Christians knew that pistis meant faith and had a religious meaning, but they apparently did not know that the New Testament gave it this meaning. It was a Christian innovation. Furthermore, the evidence soon shows that Christians began to speak of faith as not exclusively Christian. This goes all the way back to St. Augustine in the late 4th century in his book, The Confessions. He is the first, far as I can tell, that ignorantly or otherwise spoke of the Christian faith. Now, the moment you say the Christian faith, you imply that it is not the only one that has faith, that there are others, and that's exactly what has happened ever since. Well, I kept looking, was it only confined to St. Augustine? No, I found out that by the 8th century, the famous Venerable Bede of England, Britain, also spoke of the Christian faith. Sometimes he spoke of the Christian religion, but more commonly he spoke of the Christian faith. Then, down all the way to the 15th century, I find Nicholas of Cusa, a German cardinal, who spoke about the Christian faith. And then the next century, in the 16th century, we come to Martin Luther, who writes about der christliche Glaube, the Christian faith, over and over in many of his particular essays and books that he wrote. He not only wrote about the Christian faith, the christliche Glaube, he also spoke about der türkische Glaube, the Turkish faith. Now we have a distinctive example of assigning faith to non-religious group, in this case, the Islamic Turks. The latter has been, in other words, we have not, the Christians have not really been conscious of the fact that they have, in the New Testament, Pistis described and discussed as an exclusive Christian comment. Now, how did this happen? Putting the best construction on it, I can only come to this conclusion, that the New Testament, while it speaks about the exclusiveness of Pistis, it does not have a declarative, simple sentence saying that in as many words. That it's exclusive, you have to perceive by carefully reading it and recognizing it. That apparently did not happen. Not by any willful intent or what at all, but given the practice already going all the way back to St. Augustine, that he spoke about the Christian faith, which implies it is not the only one that has or values faith. It kept on going. And so this is why it took me 20 years, basically. I wanted to make sure that what I was writing would be theologically, biblically, and historically correct. And as best as I can determine, therefore, this book is titled Faith Misused, and we misuse it as we will proceed in further discussions of citing numerous and many examples of how this has become part of the Western culture, especially in the English language. And so this is basically how this book came about. And to answer the question of how long has it been going, well, ignorance has been long and it's been very, very pervasive. In my sixth chapter, I talk about the unrecognized misuse of faith, namely to say the Christian faith. Every time we as Christians say the Christian faith, we are implying that it's not an exclusive faith, which is contrary to the New Testament, very, very clearly so. That is something we have unfortunately missed. And as a result, we have not done Christianity any favor.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest. When we return, how does this ignorance commonly reveal itself in the misuse of that word, faith? Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest. He's author of The Issues, Etc., Book of the Month for February, Faith Misused, Why Christianity is Not Just Another Religion. Is it possible for the Apostle Paul to teach the doctrine of faith alone without using the words faith alone? Find out in my column in the latest Issues, Etc. journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Katie Price Vogel writes about her journey from the false assurance of works in Roman Catholicism to the true assurance of Jesus' accomplished work in the Lutheran Confession. The free online Issues Etc. journal, issuesetc.org.
I'm Chaplain Sean Denzer, Director of Worship for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Congregations work hard to keep the Word of Christ dwelling richly in His disciples now and into eternal life. We work to help and support that effort. Learn more at lcms.org/worship. You'll find resources on the church year, Bible studies on the hymns of the day, audio helps for learning to sing our services, and look for worship planning resources to find the latest from LCMS Worship. That's lcms.org/worship. May the Word of Christ dwell richly in you.
The sharpest arrow in your apologetics quiver. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
For your next family vacation, consider our beach house. A charming three-bedroom vacation rental on beautiful Siesta Key. Just off Sarasota, Florida, Siesta Key Beach, consistently voted America's best, is just 100 steps away. Whether you're watching the sunset over the Gulf of Mexico or frolicking in the warm surf, you and your family will fall in love with Siesta Key. Check us out at SiestaKeyRentalGenie.com or call Virginia at 941-266-1858.
America's tradition of liberty depends on having colleges and universities that equip young people for the responsibilities of freedom. At Concordia University Chicago, freedom is a pillar of our education. We prepare our students to live as free, self-governing citizens. I'm Dr. Rachel Ferguson, director of the Free Enterprise Center at Concordia Chicago. I invite you to visit us. Discover what it means for freedom to become a pillar of your future. Learn more at cuchicago.edu.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're beginning a series on faith and Christianity's uniqueness with Dr. Alvin Schmidt, Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College. Dr. Schmidt, before the break, you were talking about an ignorance as to the biblical meaning of the word faith. How does that ignorance commonly reveal itself in the misuse of that word?
Well, and I might mention it has also another very notable history. The word faith or pistis, as I discuss in chapter 2, has been hijacked from its biblical historical foundation. That is in part why it is widely misused today. When it was hijacked from its biblical historical foundation, that happened as a result of the historical critical method that came about in the late 1700s, early 1800s, in terms of no longer accepting the statements, and for example, the historical accurateness of miracles that Christ performed, including his resurrection. All of these were now a part of the so-called Enlightenment era, or the Age of Reason, which it was called, and a number of prominent individuals espoused this particular philosophy. One of them, the very first, was a person by the name of Richard Simon, a French early Bible critic who died in 1712. He basically argued that only the theological aspects in the Old Testament were inspired and theologically correct. Anything pertaining to the history of them, of the miracles that Jesus performed and the resurrection accounts, were not compatible with reason and therefore not accepted. Then shortly after, a German by the name of Gotthold Lessing, who, to give date his time, lived in the 1700s, died in 1781. Lessing's father was an Orthodox Lutheran pastor who wanted his son likewise to become a pastor, but that didn't happen. He chose instead to become a devotee of the theater, a playwright, a free thinker, and an outspoken Bible critic. Lessing, for example, also became friends with a deist and a strong agnostic by the name of Reimarus, who, when he died, and even before he died, he wrote an article that Lessing then published. It was basically an apology for the rational reverers of God. Lessing found out that that particular article, which of course questioned the biblical accuracy of anything historical, was not too badly received. He proceeded then, or I should interject, when Reimarus died, his family gave all the writings that he had not published to Lessing. And of course, they were very compatible with Lessing's doubts about the accuracy of anything mentioned in the Bible pertaining to historical things that Jesus performed in his miracles, and particularly the resurrection. Lessing also, in publishing these things, particular articles of Reimarus, did recognize that if he said this, that the average Christian would be appalled and offended in terms of that faith had no biblical historical accuracy. And so he tried to indicate that faith can still be genuine as long as people believe it happened, even if it didn't happen. So that was essentially what he contributed to the misunderstanding of faith. Furthermore, Lessing also argued that, for example, the accidental truths of history that can never become the proof of the necessary truths of reason. He called this was an ugly ditch over which he could not come, because he believed unmitigated reason, not facts in history, was the sole and absolute determiner of truth for him. And so we see a great departure, for example, in terms of accepting the Bible historically as a historical document. We come to another great skeptic at this period of time who contributed to the misunderstanding of faith, David Friedrich Strauss, who lived in the 1800s. He was an unrepentant apostate. He enrolled at the Tübingen University early in his life at age 17. By 1835, he published The Life of Jesus Critically Examined, which denied the miracles of Christ, the virgin birth, the divine nature of Christ, including the resurrection of the bodily resurrection of Jesus Christ. Despite his denial, nevertheless, he for a short period of time took on a Lutheran pastorate, but soon resigned from it. He was, again, an example of how he hijacked faith, because he too argued that even if the things did not happen, the Christian faith is still valid, which of course really amounts to what I talk about later on, fideism. Fideism is really believing that in faith itself. In reality, all higher critics who still talk about faith but don't accept the historicity in the biblical accounts as historically accurate are practicing believing faith in faith. In other words, fideism. This is often not made very clear, but it really is. All higher critics eventually have to be labeled, if you will, as fideists. Next, for example, we come across another major skeptic, by the name, and we're talking now about a German by the name of Martin Kaler, the proponent of superhistory. He introduced two German concepts: history, which refers to historical incidents and events, and Geschichte. Geschichte is the German word that can mean something accurate, but it can also have a different meaning, namely what we sometimes see in the light of fairy tales. And what was written in the New Testament regarding Jesus' miracles, including his resurrection, is an example of Geschichte, which meaning it didn't really happen in history, or it happened in supra-history. This is another example of departing from the basic biblical text, another way of misusing faith. Next, we come to an individual by the name of Tillich in our own country, a German who came to this country and spent most of his academic career teaching at the University of Chicago and a few other places. Tillich likewise argued that faith was greatly misused, but he added to the misuse of it. He, again, as another higher critic, saw faith as a non-verifiable existential concept in their quest for meaning in an absurd world. We come next to Rudolf Bultmann, who was often known in New Testament studies for having advocated to take out the myth, the things that are not really historical but were mythologically true, out of the New Testament, the great demythologizer, as is often known. And then we come to Karl Barth, another famous individual, another higher critic, who frequently used the word faith, but it is never linked to the historicity of Christ's bodily resurrection. We have already seen, he said, that the rising of Jesus from the dead is not an event in history elongated so as still to remain an event in the midst of our other events. End of quote. The resurrection, he further said, is the non-historical life of Jesus to its origin in God. And I will mention one more individual in this particular chapter that aided greatly to the misuse of faith, and none other than Dietrich Bonhoeffer. This individual has greatly been misunderstood, but he was a higher critic of first order. Dietrich Bonhoeffer is often seen as the mythic pantheon of the late 20th century by Christians. There appear to be a lot of individuals who have a great opinion. I've seen it in conservative theology books. But to make a long story short, most people have read his book, The Cost of Discipleship and Life Together. Both of these books do not convey that he's a higher critic. But if you read his other works, he is very, very blunt and very curt on the matter of fact. Here is an example. Quote, history provides no absolute foundation for faith, end of quote. And I quote him even in the German to make sure what I have that he says is correct. The biblical pronouncements that he talked about the resurrection did not occur in history, but in the sphere of faith, end of quote. In the sphere of faith is in quotation marks, which in German means in the sphere des Glaubens. In other words, he picked up from the concept of Taylor's Geschichte that the resurrection is not a historical event. These individuals, all of them, have contributed to the misuse of faith. And we can see it from further on as we go of how the term faith is used today. For example, I used to tell my students, not so much my students, but later on, because when I was teaching, I was not all aware of this, but after I retired and sometimes taught Bible classes, I used to tell congregational members not to use the word Islam faith, Mormon faith, Buddhist faith, because the moment you say that, you are denying that pistin the New Testament is exclusively Christian. And of course, people do not realize that, because basically we have lost the awareness that pistis was a Christian innovation, as I said earlier, that was given to the New Testament. And the result of it is an exclusively Christian concept and not something that can be applied to every other religion, which we commonly do.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest. We're beginning a series with him on faith and Christianity's uniqueness. He's Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College and author of The Issues Etc., Book of the Month for February, Faith Misused. When we come back, who was the first Christian theologian in history to formally document that this word faith is exclusively Christian? Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Alvin Schmidt is the author of our Book of the Month for February, Faith Misused, Why Christianity is Not Just Another Religion. This new book is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number 1-800-325-3040, or learn more about Faith Misused at issuesetc.org. Find out how faith is an exclusively Christian word and how Christians can reclaim it in Faith Misused, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February.
Did you know that many LCMS military personnel and their families are unable to receive Word and Sacrament ministry due to the lack of LCMS chaplains? Ministry to the Armed Forces is looking for pastors who will answer the call to serve as a chaplain to provide Word and Sacrament ministry to the men and women who selflessly serve our nation. Find out more about this exciting ministry by contacting me, Chaplain Craig Mueller, at lcmschaps@lcms.org. That is lcmschaps@lcms.org.
O morning star,
listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
When Jesus walked with his disciples to Emmaus, they had lost hope. But he opened the scriptures, broke bread, and gave it to them, and they knew him. At Emmaus Lutheran Church in Redmond, Oregon, Jesus repeats this miracle every Sunday. He makes himself known among us in preaching and the sacrament of his body and turns our sorrow to joy. Join us for divine service Sundays at 9 and visit our website, www.emmauslcms.org.
Providing artillery support for the church militant on the front lines, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by becoming an Issues Etc. congregational sponsor. Advent Lutheran, Zionsville, Indiana. Holy Shepherd Lutheran, Haslett, Texas. Holy Trinity Lutheran, Columbia, South Carolina. Our Redeemer Lutheran, Emmett, Idaho. St. Paul Lutheran, International Falls, Minnesota. Our Redeemer Lutheran, Fayetteville, North Carolina. Redeemer Lutheran, Lincoln, Nebraska. St. Peter Lutheran, Arlington, Wisconsin. Trinity Lutheran, Okmulgee, Oklahoma. And Zion Lutheran, Pleasant Plains, Illinois. Find out how your confessional Lutheran church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click Support Donate, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation becomes an Issues Etc. sponsor, we'll publicize your church on the podcast, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's a series on faith and Christianity's uniqueness. Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest, author of the book Faith Misused. So, Dr. Schmidt, who was the first Christian theologian to formally document that this word faith is exclusively Christian?
As best as I can determine, I mentioned a little while ago that Dieter Lehrman in 1992 mentioned this essentially, but I wondered, well, maybe someone else was earlier than that, and indeed there was. In 1917, William Payne Hatch wrote the book that I mentioned a little while ago, The Pauline Idea of Faith. In that particular book, he is, to my research, the first one to indicate that the Greek word pistis was given a Christian meaning in the New Testament. I can find no evidence earlier than that. In other words, it took 1900 years for someone to recognize that the word faith, pistis, was a Christian innovation with religious meaning. And then, of course, Dieter Lehrman, who does not cite him, said essentially the same thing. And as I also mentioned a little while ago to repeat, that Teresa Morgan at Oxford University even made it more plain by saying that pistis and pistis faith is exclusively Christian and never refers to anyone other than Christians. And so that's basically the history. It's not very long. And this is why, I might add, it has been misused over the years. We were really not aware that it was exclusively Christian in the New Testament. And I repeat again, because it is not clearly stated in a declarative sentence, you have to perceive this in reading. And that is where so many people, including Luther and others, apparently missed it.
What role does the exclusiveness of this word play in the life of the early Christians, especially in a pagan culture of the Greco-Romans?
Yes. It did a number of things. The concept of pistis, which didn't have any religious meaning, as I've said a couple of times, however, was a very important one to the Christians. They, for example, it gave them an social identity. They were known as the pistuontes, the believing ones among the pagan Romans. They also saw pistis faith as something that is defensible though to the Greeks and the Romans. Pistis was a was a concept that fit the lowest denominator. It was the lowest grade of cognition. To the Christians, that was the very opposite. Faith was a highly important thing because it made them aware of, and it, the concept and the object of faith was Jesus Christ. In the Roman society, pistis had no object in terms of anyone, much less a religious character in their particular pagan philosophy. They therefore also felt it could be defended, and they did. This is why we read, for example, with Peter saying, make a defense, and the Greek word is apologia, for the hope that lies within you. He encourages the Christians to do this. And we see this, for example, also in the writings of Luke, when he writes in the book of Acts, that Christ, for example, the resurrection was demonstrated by many demonstrable proofs. And that's an interesting Greek word there, for example, that is used by Aristotle, meaning evidence that is irrefutable. So Luke mentions that the resurrection was demonstrated, this is in Acts 1:3, by many demonstrable proofs. And again, Christians felt and were persuaded they could defend the validity of their faith in Christ. And this was all an example that was part of the early Christian life. And the Romans and the Greeks saw the Christians as the believing ones, those who had faith, which this is an example of how they differed by the very fact and the meaning that that pistis had for them in their life. And as Hatch mentioned, it also had strong ethical overtones. It was a way that they lived. This is why the early Christians also opposed, as we read from the early church fathers, abortion, abandonment of children, homosexual lifestyles, because it was part of the ethical nature. And this is in part what also frequently led for them to be persecuted and many times even executed the first 300 years of the Christian's existence in the Christian church.
Is this distinctive use of the word faith, is it found in the New Testament?
Yes, by the very word of the believing ones. And Paul uses that many times. And that was basically, it's a little difficult in the English language. The Greek word is pistuontes, which indicates the believing ones. The problem we have in the English language, the word faith has no verbal forms. Unlike the pistis, you have different verbal forms, and likewise in German. And so it makes it a little difficult when we read the word pistuontes, that it, for example, refers to the Christians, basically. It was basically another way of saying a Christian. I might add, it is very interesting that the word Christian only appears three times in the New Testament. The first time it appears is in Acts 11:26, which happened in Antioch, probably about in the mid-40s, about the same time that Paul launched his three missionary journals. And then we read it again, for example, in Acts 26, where St. Paul is standing in front of King Agrippa and being interrogated, and then Paul presents his case for being a Christian, And then, sort of facetiously, you might say, Agrippa replies to Paul, "Almost you think you persuade me to be a Christian." That's the second time it appears. It appears one more time in 1 Peter, where Peter talks about the word Christian being often a word that led to Christians being persecuted and shunned and hated and disliked. Those are the only three times it appears in the New Testament. It is also interesting why this particular term Christian was not used by Paul. We don't know why. Paul could have used the word Christian, for example, in Galatians 6, verse 10. That's the very familiar passage that we often say, repeat when Paul says, "Let us do good unto all men, especially unto the household of faith." Interestingly, again, in the Greek, it says the faith, not just a faith, except the translations often don't capture it. The emphasis again is that faith was exclusive, but again, you have to sort of perceive it. Similarly, we find, for example, Jesus, when he says, "When the Son of Man will come," it is commonly translated in Luke 18, verse 8, "Will he find faith on earth?" The Greek, however, says, "Will he find the faith?" Not just any faith. And this is another example of how the word faith today has been misused and sometimes aided by translators who really did not convey what the Greek initially says.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest. We're beginning a series with him on faith and Christianity's uniqueness. When we return, we'll contrast the Christian view of faith with the pagan view of faith. If you appreciate Issues Etc., our 24/7 music and talk stations, and our daily verse-by-verse Bible study, The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, please include a bequest in your will or trust for these worldwide media resources. Bequests aren't subject to federal tax or capital gains taxes. Ensure your children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren the opportunity to listen by including a bequest in your will or trust for Issues Etc., Lutheran Public Radio, and The Word of the Lord Endures Forever.
What do you know about Islam or Judaism or Buddhism? Well, if you've wondered how these teachings, these religions, relate to Christianity, or in particular Lutheranism, you're in luck. The February issue of the Lutheran Witness is all about Lutheranism and the world religions. To pick up your copy, visit cph.org/witness or learn more at our website, witness.lcms.org. The Lutheran Witness, helping you interpret the world from a Lutheran perspective.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Logia Journal, the Confessional Dogmatic Series. The works of Kurt Marquardt and many other resources are all brought to you by Luther Academy. Did you know that during this time of COVID-19, your purchases and donations help Luther Academy supply these same resources to pastors around the world? Please consider helping us with this important need through your prayers and financial support. Learn how you can help by visiting lutheracademy.com, lutheracademy.com.
Memoria Press exists to promote and impart the classical heritage of the Christian West through an emphasis on the liberal arts and the great works of the Western tradition. The Memoria Press curriculum encourages the development of wisdom and virtue through the pursuit of truth, goodness, and beauty. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR22. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time. memoriapress.com.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the word faith. Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest, Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College, author of the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February, Faith Misused, Why Christianity is Not Just Another Religion.
Dr. Schmidt, if you would explain how the early Christian view of faith differed from the pagan Greek view of faith.
Well, as I mentioned a while ago, the Greeks had no, the concept of pistis had no religious meaning or connotation. This is a big surprise that most of us have never really realized. As I mentioned in the introduction of my book, for most of my life, and I'm not the only one, one or two of my endorsers of the book mentioned the same thing, that we have never, even in theological seminaries, been told about the exclusiveness of the word faith in the New Testament. This is why it took me most of my life as a graduate of the seminary to discover that within the last 20 years, and since I've been out of the seminary 58 years, we have simply somehow overlooked that, not by design, but primarily by culture. I mentioned, for example, I cite a famous anthropologist, that culture hides things from individual, especially sometimes from its own people. This is really why we have not captured this. Seeing and recognizing, for example, that the word faith has been misused. We'll cite more examples of this as we move on. But to the early Christians, they knew what faith meant. It meant, for example, that Christ was their object of faith, that he offered them life and salvation, that faith, for example, something that was to promote, to motivate them to do good works, and they did, which again made them very different from the pagan Romans and Greeks. And this is another example that we have not quite realized, that pistis to the New Testament people was a powerful concept, a powerful phenomenon. And I cannot express it any clearer than that. It distinguished them. The Greeks and the Romans often would refer to them as the believing ones, again in the Greek word, which was not a complimentary word, by the way.
Why did it take centuries for this exclusive nature of faith in the New Testament to be formally recognized?
Well, that's the mystery, and that's the reason I think I took 20 years to write this book. One is because, as I mentioned a little while ago, it never says in the New Testament in a simple declarative sentence. If it would have done that, maybe this would never have happened. You have to perceive it by reading the New Testament that it is exclusively Christian. And I might mention, I have only been able to find three scholars that have noted this. The first one was Hatch, the second was Learman, and the most recent one was in 2015, Teresa Morgan at Oxford University. There may be others, but in my long research, I have not found more than those three scholars who have noticed this. The rest of the Christian world has not noticed it. If they have, they haven't mentioned it. And in fact, it might be interesting to know that when you read Hatch's book, he mentions very clearly that pistis is an exclusive concept, but he fails to mention or fails to recognize that this was not recognized by the Christians until he recognized it. I do not know of anyone else who recognized it before his time. Learman, who in 1992 mentioned it the first time, that Christianity was an exclusive concept, but he too doesn't note that this was not recognized. And similarly, neither does Teresa Morgan. She mentions that it's exclusively Christian, namely pistis and pistis language, but she fails to recognize that it should not therefore be used by other Christians. Interestingly, she uses the word Christian faith in the title of her book. So there is a lot of puzzling, interesting things that revolve about the ignorance or the lack of people knowing that pistis was an exclusive Christian language. And I would hope and pray that we will, as Christians, and this is one of my pleas later on at a mention in the book, that Christians will begin to become conscious of the fact and no longer glibly speak of the Christian faith, the Muslim faith, the Mormon faith, and similar examples. So that's essentially how I would respond to that question of yours.
How does this word faith in the New Testament differ from, as you mentioned here, the hijacked uses of faith in other religions?
Well, first of all, it is historically anchored, in my image. Faith is something that is linked to the life and works of Jesus Christ, which includes his miracle, his crucifixion, and his resurrection. Faith is not divorced from them. It is not something that you believe, as the higher critic says. The higher critics basically argue that the things pertaining to the miracles that Jesus performed, including the resurrection, are reports that are basically the result of what the apostles in their eyes of faith wrote and recorded. That is the historical argument. That is not, however, the biblical historical argument. As Peter mentioned, as defend what's happened, or as I said a little while ago, Luke mentioned, the resurrection happened with demonstrable proofs, irrefutable proofs. This is not the kind of language where you talk about the eyes of the disciples or apostles' faith. This is where we, as confessional Lutherans, Christians, draw the line by departing from higher criticism. Because to higher criticism, these events really didn't happen. The other thing we need to remember, how Christianity differs not only by using the word of faith, but its evidence is based on eyewitness accounts. All the other religions that are called faith today as a result of not realizing what has happened since the New Testament are basically hearsay religions. None of the major religions, whether it's Islam, Muslims, Islam, or, for example, Mormons or Buddhists, all of their so-called faith-based evidence is hearsay. Not one of them has an eyewitness account. In the New Testament, all of the accounts are based on eyewitness accounts. 11 of the writers of these eyewitness reporters, the apostles, signed the testimony in blood, so to speak. And the one who died in prison died also as a result of eyewitness accounts as he wrote the Gospel of John. What we need to recall is the misuse of faith has led us to devalue Christian religion, the Christian message, by using faith in the same way they are used now relative to the non-eyewitness account of religions, which differs drastically from the accounts of the New Testament. These individuals, I might also mention, when they left, they went to different parts of the world. Thomas apparently went to India. St. Mark went apparently to Egypt. And all these other places they went, they were by themselves. They stood to let themselves be martyred, even though they didn't have any social support of like-minded people, namely like other fellow apostles. That is another powerful message that we sometimes don't recognize. They signed their testimony in faith, so to speak, because they knew what they had been preaching and teaching and writing even in their New Testament epistles and gospels had actually happened. And that makes Christianity, again, a unique and exclusive religion with being the only one entitled to use the word faith.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt is Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College. He's author of The Issues, Etc., Book of the Month for February, Faith Misused, Why Christianity is Not Just Another Religion. When you call Concordia Publishing House, ask for The Issues, Etc., Book of the Month for February, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, or browse before you buy at our website, issuesetc.org. Dr. Schmidt, thank you.
My pleasure.
Next hour, we'll discuss Jesus calling the first disciples in Luke chapter 5 as we look forward to Sunday morning according to the three-year lectionary with Dr. Carl Fekentcher of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
What makes Christ Our Savior Lutheran Church in Freeburg, Illinois so special? Our new members talk about the family atmosphere, the welcoming people, and the outstanding music. But most importantly, you'll be confronted with your sin and comforted with the assurance that Jesus has removed that sin so that you can live each day as His baptized and forgiven child. Christ Our Savior Lutheran Church is at 612 North State Street in Freeburg, Illinois. Sunday worship is at 9 a.m. Sunday school and Bible classes at 10:20 a.m. Call 618-539-5664.
Unshaken from Psalm 16:8 is the theme for the 44th academic year at Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois. We engage young adults in a Christ-centered environment, delivering academic excellence and encouraging spiritual growth. Please help us provide tuition assistance to more students by making a tax-deductible gift at melhs.org and click on the support page. Or call me, Dr. J. Krause, principal, at 618-656-656. 0043.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.